You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Hello and welcome to Money Control Podcast. I'm Santosh Nair in conversation with Professor Sanjay Bakshi. Before I get chatting, here's a brief introduction about him. Professor Bakshi is considered to be one of the best minds in India on the subjects of value investing and behavioral finance. Besides these two subjects, he also teaches corporate governance and forensic accounting at Management Development Institute, Gurgaon. And he not only teaches value investing, but also practices it as managing partner at ValueQuest Capital. Thank you for joining us on the show, Professor Bakshi.
Thank you, Santosh. Thank you for having me with you here today. I'm glad that you're doing this.
So tell us, what got you interested in investing? Was this your first choice as a career?
Well, almost everything that has happened to me in life has been sort of accidental. In this case, I used to see my dad. Papa used to be a value investor. He's the kind of investor that you profiled in your book. You know, old school, faith-based investors who would pick up an entrepreneur and blindly follow him. And the entrepreneur that my dad picked up was a guy called Dhirubhai Ambani. And he used to have a lot of faith in Dhirubhai's ability to compound capital. And we all know that, you know, Dhirubhai was involved. He was instrumental in creating the equity cult in India. So my father was part of that cult. And he used to talk about him all the time. And I used to watch him. And I was like a kid at that time. And it turns out that my dad did fairly well. You know, he was a bureaucrat in the government. And he used to invest in the stock market. And his favorite stock was Reliance. And he made money in that. And I'm actually grateful to Dhirubhai, because Dhirubhai funded my first motorcycle. Because my dad sold some shares in Reliance Industries to give me a mobile. So that's the way I used to see dad work very hard in his office. And you go at like 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the morning and come late in the evening. But his investing hardly took any time. And I thought that this is really cool. You know, you can make money and you can fund bikes from equities. So that's how I originally got interested in the idea of investing. That was when I was in my school. Then I got into college, and in the college, I ended up, partnering with a friend of mine, and we ended up investing in some IPOs, and we lost all the money over there. So that was a big lesson. Anyway, fast forward, and I ended up, after finishing my graduation, I ended up doing my chartered accountancy, and in my chartered accountancy course, where I trained for 3 years as an accountant, I learned everything about accounting and how transactions end up becoming financial statements. I could pick up all of that, but I had no clue about the quality of the business or the management. I had no idea about that. I certainly had no idea about human nature and psychology. And then I ended up getting a scholarship to go to study at the London School of Economics. It was in the LSE where I accidentally discovered the idea of value investing. So by now, until now, I had no idea about what is value investing. Just watching my dad, and I was just speculating in the IPO market and, you know, blowing money. But when I was at the LSE, I was being taught the standard academic finance papers that markets are efficient and there are no mispriced bets. You should just buy the market portfolio. And then I accidentally came across an article in the newspaper about this obscure guy. He operates out of a town called Omaha. This is 1990. And, you know, Mr. Buffett wasn't as well known as he is right now. And that article said a few things which were quite contrary to what I was being taught. Things like, one, he has a wonderful track record. He stays far away from the stock markets. And he believes that the markets are often quite wrong. And the article also said that you could get his letters, because in those letters he explains his thoughts on investing, how he thinks about the world of business and investing. And you could get them for free. And I was very inspired by that, and I wrote to him, and his secretary wrote back that I will be happy to send you the letters, but send me the postage money, which is probably the best investment I ever made. I got those letters in about 4 or 5 days, and basically I found my calling when I read those letters, because as I mentioned, I already had accounting background. I was already a graduate from University of Delhi after having done my BCom honors, so I knew business law and economics, a little bit of economics, and in my CA I had learned accounting and auditing. When I read through those letters, I could start connecting the dots, that there is a way, there is a method of investing which can create a lot of value, can make you a lot of money. And through those letters, I discovered Mr. Buffett's teacher, Ben Graham, who taught him at Columbia University. And of course, I went and bought all the books of Ben Graham, you know, all the editions of Security Analysis, and I bought Intelligent Investor. And as I was going through those books, I've discovered a very interesting piece. It's not appeared anywhere else to my mind. In the third edition of Security Analysis, there is a piece called Special Situations, where Graham describes how to make money in the stock market without thinking about fundamentals, without predicting future fundamental information, without studying balance sheets. Basically, he was doing what we now call as risk arbitrage, you know, event-driven strategies, you know, tender offers and buybacks and, you know, recapitalizations, where the outcome of your investment operation is dependent upon the happening or non-happening of a corporate event, nothing to do with markets. So that was very interesting to me for two reasons. One, you get uncorrelated returns. And two, you don't have to predict things. You don't have to even do a lot of fundamental analysis. So that was one piece which was very influential to me, Special Situations. The second essay that I read through was in the appendix to the Intelligent Investor. The 50th year of the publication of Security Analysis in 1984, Warren Buffett went to Columbia University and gave a talk. That is a famous talk. All early investors know about that talk. It's called The Super Investors of Graham and Dodsville. In that talk, there is a certain passage which, when I read, just blew my mind.
What was that?
That passage was that Buffett uses a metaphor of a gun, and he says that, you know, if you have a gun which has got six chambers in it, and if I put a bullet in one chamber and you ask me how much do you want to be paid to pull the trigger once, I'm not going to pull it. And then if you, even if it's $1 million, and if somebody asks you that I'll give you $2 million, will you pull it now? And that's a positive correlation between risk and reward. But in value investing is the opposite, that if you're buying a $100 bill for $110, it's risky. But if you're buying it on $60, it's less risky. $60 is less risky. But the expectation of reward is higher in the latter case. That if you buy it for 60 and it goes back to fair value, you make money. If you buy it for 110 and it goes back to fair value, you lose money. So over here, you have less risk of loss, but the return is higher, which was extremely, extremely counterintuitive to me, because as I mentioned, I was studying the LSE and the profs over there were telling me that if you want to make more money, you got to take more risk. This guy is saying the opposite. He's saying if you want to make more money, you got to take less risk. And I said, my God, this guy is saying something which is exact opposite of what I've been taught, and I got to know more about this stuff. And as I worked through the examples of Ben Graham's books, I've basically found my calling and decided that this is what I want to do. Came back to India.
What was the experience like when you came back to India?
Very tough. I knew that I was sort of... So if I go back a little... Before I went to the LSE, I had a stint. I worked for a company called American Express for 6 months. And that period of working in American Express basically told me that I'm basically unemployable, that I can't work for any boss or anything like that. So when I came back after my stay in England, in India, I never wanted to work for another company. So I had to be on my own. And I had no money. And I came back with 3 lakh rupees. That was all my net worth was 300,000 rupees at the time. And if you want to start your career as a value investor, you can't do much with 3 lakhs. And by then, I already had a daughter. You know, I mean, I'd been married in 1990, came back with a daughter. So I had a family to support. So it was very tough in the initial years. And I started writing columns for money. And I used to write, you know, 2 or 3 columns a week. So I did a lot of those. And then I started teaching in a couple of business schools. Just to get the money to support me while I was building a career as a value investor. Then I went to friends and family members and I collected a pool of capital, a princely sum of 20 lakh rupees, which was, I think, given to me more out of pity by my friends and family than out of any conviction, because I really had no track record at that time. You know, they just knew that, okay, this is a decent person, but he can, let's give him some money, let's back him. And that's what I tell all my students now, you know, if they want to start up their career as a value investor, you don't have enough money to begin with. You need other people's money, and those people are almost certainly going to be people who trust you. People have known you, which is basically your childhood friends and your family members. So that's how I started, but 4 or 5 years was very tough.
So you collected 20 lakh rupees and invested all the money in stocks. How did it turn out?
It was very painful because I had all this theoretical knowledge and I thought I was a hotshot, you know, value investor who has learned everything, read up everything on Buffett and Graham and, you know, and I'm a qualified chartered accountant. So I know I can crack this. And I think in 3 years, I lost 40% of the money. And part of the money came from my mother-in-law.
That's tough.
That's very tough. It was, but it's a blessing, you know, in the sense, I think losing money in the early part of your journey, it's very painful, but it teaches you a few things.
So how did your friends take to it? Well, eventually, did they make a decent enough return on that investment?
Well, ultimately, they all redeemed and I bought them out because it was a sort of a loosely held investment partnership. As I became more evolved as an investor, as I got more clients, I bought all of them out over a period of time. And, you know, they were happy about the outcome. You know, I don't want to say that they had great outcomes, but nobody lost money and they did pretty okay.
What were the learnings from that maiden venture as a professional money manager? What were the things you felt you did right and where did you go wrong?
So if you recall, you know, we just spoke about my experience even before that, and I had speculated in IPOs. And everybody was making money in IPOs, and I got in at the wrong time with the wrong issues and I lost money. And when I read through the books, I came across passages written by Graham as for the reason why he says that you should stay away from IPOs. He says that there is a lot of salesmanship behind these issues and there is a timing matter that entrepreneurs are not going to come and give you their companies for a song at the bottom of bear market. Typically, it will be in a bull market cycle that you will see a lot of IPO activity happening. So, in the secondary market, it opens every day. So, you know, the probability that you will find a bargain in the secondary market is so much higher than in the primary market. So in that sense, once I had faced losses, I could relate as to why those losses occurred by studying the reasons as to why they occurred. Then I knew, gradually learned about what to avoid, you know, how to avoid those things. So that was one thing that happened. So the early experience for me was really about learning from losses. And in a sense, you know, one thing which I've learned over the years is you're going to have losses in this field all the time. So taking losses or facing losses in the early part of your journey has been good for me. And I think it's good for almost everybody, provided you can get the right lessons from that. In a sense, one thing which I've learned by reading a little bit of behavioral economics is about the power of framing. And if you frame those losses and the money that you lost in those losses and just give them a label of tuition fees paid, then that helps. Psychologically, it helps you, number one. Number two, if it is a hefty tuition fee that you paid, then you're not likely to make the same mistakes again. And then and it also gives you hope. You learn something, move on. And don't make the same mistake again because you already graduated, you know, you paid that tuition fees. So don't make that. Your education will come from your losses. In that sense. So the idea of framing losses as tuition fees has been very helpful to me. So that was one thing which happened. There's something else that happened to me, and I've spoken about it very rarely, first time doing it in public. In 1990, when I was a student at the LSE, one of my father's friend who was living in England, living in London, we used to meet him a lot. He one day told me, let me take you to a casino, just for fun. And he took me and my wife to a casino, Victoria Casino in Edgeway Road in London. And I went there and I gambled for the first time in my life in a casino. The first time I actually entered a casino and I made money. And when I made money, I felt happy. I felt very, very delighted about it. And then I thought that I had discovered the way of becoming rich quick. You know, now, to you now it sounds funny, and you know, to all your listeners it will sound like a really ridiculous thing to say, but at the time when I made money for the first time, I thought I had invented a new way of life. That I could, double my beds and double them again. I know the standard martingale strategies that people use. And I made money, you know. There was a beginner's luck aspect to it. And it got hooked me onto it.
Do you recall how much money you exactly made on that bet?
Initially, I made about like 20, 30 pounds. But on a day, on a specific day, because now I was hooked. Because now I was going there. Now I was bunking classes. And I was going there. I was there before the casino opened. And I was there, you know, right till the evening. And I would gamble. And there was a day on which I made 2,000 pounds. Which was an enormous sum of money for my net worth at that point of time. It was an enormous sum of money. For a student, you know, living on scholarship, it was a huge amount of money. And I felt that this is what I can do for life, you know. I know a system. I found a way of gambling. And I was using some methods, so-called methods, which almost always will make you go broke ultimately, which is what happened with me ultimately. But I got hooked. And I gambled more, because one thing which happens in gambling is that if you make money, you're going to go back.
Right.
You gamble more. Very few people actually say that, okay, I made money, I was lucky, let me walk away. It's extremely difficult to walk away. You go back. I went back and I lost everything and more, and then I became extremely emotional about it, because my wife was working early mornings in the winter to support me, because I didn't have money for financial support for living expenses, and living in London was very expensive. So she was supporting both my education, and I blew up all over net worth, and I felt terrible about it. And then I made a pledge that I'm not going to go to a casino, or if I go, I'm not going to gamble. And I've stayed with that since then. And you know, many years later, my wife and I went to Las Vegas, and I gave her all the chips that the hotels give you for free. I said, you go to the tables, I'm not going. So that the reason I mentioned this today is because those losses, when you suffer, are emotionally very distressing, but they're also very instructive. They make, at least for me, they made me aware of the downside risk as to what can go wrong. And in his book, you know, Ben Graham defines what is the meaning of investing. And he starts with a very simple definition. He says, an investment operation is one which, upon thorough analysis, promises safety of principal plus an adequate return. Safety of principle plus an adequate return. Safety of principle comes before, the adequate return comes later. And this is very important, and a lot of people don't get this, and I certainly didn't get it at the time. And I think there's another guy called Will Rogers who said pretty much the same thing in a much more entertaining manner, and he said that I'm more concerned with the return of my money than the return on my money. And if you look at the history of financial markets, you'll find that there are periods during which people don't follow this advice. They would be more focused on the return on their money than the return of their money.
This has been a Money Control presentation.